Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Today is the last day you can register to vote or change your registration to vote in California's June 7th primary. There is a lot of movement going on right now. According to figures from California's 58 counties, more than 850,000 people have registered to vote in California. These are brand new voters. But the rules are very confusing, so please bear with me because there are many. So if you are voting for a Republican or a Green Party candidate for president, you have to be registered with those parties. If you are voting for a Democratic presidential candidate, you can register as either no party preference or Democrat. But if you vote by mail and you are a no party preference voter, you have to request a Democratic ballot by the end of this month. Better yet, you might want to vote in person. And if you do, bring in your ballot. Again, if you're a no party preference voter and you want to vote for Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton, you have to request a Democratic ballot a week before the primary, so at the end of this month. And then, if you live here in San Francisco and you plan to vote in the race for the Democratic County Central Committee, you have to be registered as a Democrat. You cannot be no party preference and vote in that race. You must be a Democrat. It's called the DCCC, and it's the governing body of the local Democratic Party. It has strong endorsement power and pushes a political agenda. It's a really important race. The San Francisco Examiner, the San Francisco Chronicle, and 48 Hills all have stories about the money being poured into this race. Here in San Francisco, we're also voting on six propositions. Yes, six. A lot of people don't know about these, and they affect issues like affordable housing and police shootings all across the state. There are very important local propositions. And then at the statewide level, we're voting on Proposition 50, which would give state senators and assembly members the power to suspend a politician without pay and benefits. So there's a lot to talk about. And joining us today is Kim Alexander, president and founder of the California Voter Foundation, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that works to improve the voting process to better serve the needs and interests of voters. And Kim joins us on the line from Sacramento. Hi, Kim. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. Thanks for having me.
Well, it is so good to have you because this is very, very confusing. And I have been shocked, frankly, that I haven't seen more voter outreach by the Secretary of State's office or even really by the media. And I called the Secretary of State's office about a month ago and said, so what do you have planned? And they said, well, it's not that confusing. The rules are out there. And I said, no, actually, it is confusing. So, Kim, do you think this should be the onus should be on the citizen to read about all of this? I mean, is that where we are now?
We have an election process where the responsibility for putting on elections largely resides at the county level. And there are state laws, and of course, the Secretary of State plays an important role in the voting process. But when it comes to, you know, trying to impose uniform regulations and rules across all counties in the state, that's difficult because if the state passes laws requiring that counties do everything the same exact way, that becomes a what's called a state-mandated local program, and the state has to fund the costs of those laws, and they don't want to pay for that. In fact, the state has suspended funding for election programs for the last five budget cycles and plans to do it again for this cycle. So to me, that's really the root of the problem. What's happened is in California is, you know, we don't have any of the kinds of barriers that you see in other states to voting. We make it easy to vote in terms of, you know, we have online voter registration. We have early voting. As you mentioned, you can go to your county election office today and vote at the counter if you want.
Right.
And we have no excuse vote by mail voting. But we don't have the kind of uniformity that I think voters need at a time like this where the rules are very confusing. We have a different set of rules for voting for president than the rules that we have for voting for all the other contests on the ballot. So that right there makes it a lot more complex. And this isn't the first election where we've had this challenge of crossover voters who are no party preference voting in a partisan primary. But we have three times as many voters who are in this boat of being, you know, no party preference voter and a vote by mail voter. So it's affecting a lot more people And what we're seeing on the ground among the counties is a lot of variation in how counties instruct voters about their rights and opportunities to get a replacement ballot if they don't like the ballot that was automatically sent to them, which had no presidential candidates on it if you didn't ask for a partisan ballot.
Well, so on the in the exciting side of things, there are 850,000 new voters on the rolls now.
Yeah.
This is just dwarfing the numbers we saw in 2008 and 2012. And these newly registered voters are overwhelmingly young people, 37% under 25 and 64% 35 or younger. I mean, that's really exciting to see.
It is. And we also are seeing a lot of people changing their party preference because they want to vote in a certain primary. Maybe they want to vote in the Republican primary or the Democratic primary. So you have a lot of people who have maybe signed up to vote for the first time, made their party choices. If they check the box that says, yes, I want to be a permanent vote-by-mail voter, then they would have a ballot automatically sent to them. And now we're getting into the, you know, 2 weeks before the election, crucial period of time where maybe people are opening their ballots and looking at what actually arrived, which I hope that they will do. I mean, that's really one thing we really have to get across. I emailed with the California Voter Foundation Board of Directors about these issues today and yesterday, and heard back from one of my board members, who is a no-party preference voter, that he did take a look at his ballot, saw that there were no presidential candidates on it. And also, you know, there were some instructions there for how to get a replacement ballot, but it failed to mention, this is a Contra Costa voter, it failed to mention that he had the option of taking that ballot to the polling place and turning it in there and getting a new replacement ballot at his polling place on election day. So, you know, that's just one example of how, you know, the counties are not educating voters in the same way across the state. And that's why there's been this lawsuit filed. I don't know if you saw that over the weekend, but there has been a lawsuit filed that this is violating voters' right to equal protection and equal treatment under the law when they vote.
So we'll talk about that lawsuit, but I just want to make sure we have the information right for vote-by-mail voters, because so many people now vote by mail. So if you vote by mail and you're no party preference, you will not have presidential candidates on your ballot. So
unless you requested a certain ballot, and
right.
The counties mailed voters postcards that said, you know, to tell us what ballot you want. Many of them put dates on those postcards based on what the county's mailing schedule was, and some people have interpreted that to mean that was the deadline, and it's not actually the deadline. Voters can get replacement ballots at least up until May 31st by contacting their county, making a request, and it varies how you make that request from county to county as well, but most counties will help you at least get started over the phone. It may be possible to get a replacement ballot even after that date, but there's not a lot in the law that says explicitly what the counties are supposed to do with voters in this situation, which, again, is not just no-party preference voters who are also vote-by-mail voters, but also people who recently changed their registration status and are vote-by-mail voters. Because we're getting a lot of calls and emails from voters saying, hey, I changed from Democrat to Republican, but I got a Democratic ballot in the mail. You know, what am I supposed to do now? And so those voters in that situation should be getting a new ballot sent to them once the counties process their registration application, but it may take a little time. So, you know, we really encourage people to go online, use the county's lookup tools. Many counties, particularly in the Bay Area, have tools on their website where you can go and check your party preference, and you can check your vote-by-mail ballot status and see when your ballot was issued and see if it's on its way. So those can be really helpful resources for voters who are trying to sort this out.
Right. And we have a link to check your preference. I suggest, once you check your preference, print that out and bring it with you, because I'm also now hearing stories of people who changed their registration, like you said, Kim, and it's showing that they didn't change their registration. So just make sure that information is right.
Well, and it may be that it hasn't been processed yet. Like, it may be that they haven't updated that on the website yet, but it has been received. I mean, these things don't happen automatically. You know, we live in this world where people think things are going to happen immediately when they push a button online, and it's not the way that it works. When you fill out a voter registration form, it's an application to register to vote. It has to be reviewed
right.
and approved. So, and then it's got to be that change has to be entered into the county's election management system, and that's then got to get pushed out to their online lookup tool. So it doesn't happen immediately.
Do you think, Kim, that if you're a no party preference and you have not requested a ballot and you have your ballot, is it better to go in person because I bet the registrars and the phone lines are just going to be full. So is it better to go in person early?
You know, it really depends on your county. We encourage people to go to the county website and see what directions they're providing there. Many of the counties do have information on their websites about how they advise voters what to do. But if you can get to your county election office, you know, which they're all open during business hours, and you can vote at the counter right now, you could take your ballot that you got in to your county election office, and they call it surrender your ballot, turn your ballot in, and get a replacement ballot. You can either leave and vote it at home, or you can fill it out right there and cast your ballot at the county election office and be done with it.
And again, if you want to vote for a Republican or a Green, you have to be registered with those parties.
That's right.
But if you want to vote for a Dem, you can be no party preference.
But the burden is on you to make sure that you get the ballot of your choice.
Right.
And that's the way the law was written. This is, I mean, people are upset with how counties are implementing the law, but they didn't write the law that says that the onus is upon the voters to request a ballot. That's the way Prop 14 was written that created the situation.
There's also been a lot of confusion around the American Independent Party. The LA Times had a really good story a couple of months ago about how 500,000 Californians are registered with the far-right American Independent Party, thinking that that's independent, and it's not. Here in California, independent is no party preference. And Kim, I was really curious about this. So I went over to the Independent Voter website, and it's just a really great space for people who want to learn more about voting. And I learned, according to this site, that when California adopted Proposition 14, the law deprived the ability of independent candidates to be, quote, independent on the ballot. Instead, the party label is party preference none. Mm-hmm. Why is that? It's really confusing.
Well, you have to kind of go back to the making of this law, Prop 14, which was really a great example of some of the finest legislative sausage making any of us have ever seen before. This whole change in the law that created our top two primary and this whole idea of party preference instead of this party affiliation, what we normally would say, is a result of a budget deal that went down when Arnold Schwarzenegger was governor, and we needed a two-thirds vote to pass the budget at that time, and he was scrambling around trying to get the votes, and there was one Republican who said, I'll give you my vote if you put this measure on the ballot to go back to go to this open primary system that became the top two proposal. So that deal was cut, and the law was written in about 3 days and approved by the legislature and thrust on the next ballot, and the voters approved it. And so there was some cleanup legislation to deal with some of the problem areas, but there definitely needs to be more cleanup legislation. And the challenge is, number one, you know, we have primary elections for president once every 4 years, so it's hard to sustain interest in the need for election reform legislation in general, but it's particularly difficult when you're talking about, you know, an election that happens once every 4 years. It's easy for people to forget, you know, as the months pass, how challenging this was for people right now. So it's important to sustain voter interest and lawmaker interest in making these reforms happen. This isn't the first election where we had this problem. We had this problem in 2008 as well, when Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton were running for president against each other, and we had moved our primary to February. And it was easier, though, in that election, because we had actually bifurcated our primary and we put all the other contests on the ballot in June. And so voters really only had to worry about what the rules were around voting in the presidential primary and not confuse that with the rules around the other contests. You know, but we saw similar challenges then, and we had a much smaller group of voters at that time who were in this no party preference, you know, mail ballot voter camp, about 700,000 at that time. Now it's 2.1 million. So it's three times as many voters who are independents and pre-mailed a ballot, and 90% of them are probably not getting the ballot that they want to vote.
Kim Alexander is president and founder of the California Voter Foundation, a nonpartisan organization that works to improve the voting process to better serve the needs and interests of voters. Today, we are talking about California's primary on June 7th. Today is the last day you can register to vote or change your registration to vote. You have until midnight tonight. There is a very easy website that allows you to check how you are currently registered. Find it at yourcallradio.org. And again, I'm just going to repeat these rules throughout the show because they're so important. If you're voting for a Republican or a Green Party candidate for president, you have to be registered with those parties. If you're voting for a Democratic presidential candidate, you can register as either no party preference or a Democrat. But if you vote by mail, you have to request a Democratic ballot before the election. You have until the end of this month. Some people are saying it's better to go in person, but bring your ballot with you. If you live in San Francisco and you want to vote in the race for the Democratic County Central Committee, also called DCCC, you have to be registered as a Democrat. So you cannot be a Green or no party preference and vote in the DCCC race. You have to be a Democrat. And the DCCC is the governing body of the local Democratic Party. It has strong endorsement power and pushes a political agenda. This is a really important race. And the 48 Hills, the Examiner, the Chronicle, they all have stories about all of the money being poured into this race. And Tim Redman from 48 Hills will be joining us to talk about that race in just a couple of minutes. And then also at the statewide level, we're voting on Prop 50, which would give state senators and assembly members the power to suspend a politician without pay and benefits. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But first, let me give out the numbers. And if you have any questions or comments about the primary, now is the time to call. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Kim, because the presidential race has been, well, exciting in many other words, very surreal in many ways, the other races haven't really been getting that much attention. I mean, up until Friday, a lot of friends didn't realize we actually have a proposition on the statewide ballot, Proposition 50. So tell us about what that would do.
This proposition was put on the ballot by the legislature in the wake of a number of political scandals involving state senators who had been under investigation by the FBI, including former San Francisco State Senator Leland Yee, who at the time was a candidate for Secretary of State, you may recall. But the proposal, Prop 50, says that the legislature would have the ability to suspend a lawmaker without pay if they're under certain circumstances, and makes it, you know, gives them the authority to do that. There was a lot of talk at the time that these lawmakers were under investigation, that they were still entitled to vote, that they didn't resign their seats. They were still, you know, sitting lawmakers and drawing a salary, and a lot of people found that offensive. So this measure was put on the ballot as a way to respond to that criticism. And some people support the measure. It's supported by groups like California Forward and League of Women Voters. But other groups think that it doesn't go far enough. I mean, some people think that it's not enough to just suspend them without pay, that they should be able to be expelled, that the legislature should have the authority to be able to expel a lawmaker. So, and those arguments are made by a number of legislative Republicans. So that's the choice for voters, whether they think it goes far, doesn't go far enough. That's the yes-no vote on Prop 50.
Are some people saying that this is one step and then there might be other rules?
I'm not sure what you mean by one step.
Well, is this one step? Like, if people say it doesn't go far enough, are some people saying, well, this is one step in a much wider, maybe there will be another proposition in November to tackle this issue?
Well, there won't be another one in November, I can tell you that. I think that, you know, this was a really politically difficult situation because all the legislators who were under investigation were Democrats, and, you know, there was a lot of pressure on the Democratic leaders of the legislature to do something in response to this corruption. And so this is what they came up with. And to the Republicans, they felt that the proposal didn't go far enough because the legislature ought to have, they felt, the ability to actually expel lawmakers and not just suspend them. So, this proposal was put forward, I believe, by the legislature as a way to try to appease their critics that said, you know, these lawmakers grew out of a corrupt system that you're nurturing and supporting through the, you know, largesse of campaign monies that needs to be raised in order to remain a member of the Senate Democratic Caucus. So, you know, that's really kind of what the argument is about, and it's up to voters to decide if they think that, giving legislators the right to suspend a fellow lawmaker for alleged crimes is justified, or whether there ought to be a different law that goes further, although I don't see it likely that any other proposal will be coming before voters anytime soon.
Kim Alexander is president of the California Voter Foundation, and joining us now is Tim Redmond, founder of 48 Hills, a progressive daily online paper. Tim is also former editor of the San Francisco Bay Guardian. Hi, Tim. Thanks for coming in.
Hey. Hi. Good morning.
Good morning. So what would you add on Prop 50?
Well, Prop 50, I think Kim is right. Prop 50 was put on the ballot because the Democratic leadership was embarrassed because, all right, we have Leland Yee, who is accused of a series of terrible crimes, and they can suspend him, but under the current law, he still gets paid. So you get all these newspaper stories saying, well, they suspended Leland Yee, but he's still drawing his $80,000 a year salary, and it looks really bad. So this is what they've done. The interesting point for the people, the Republicans and the people that say, oh, we should be able to expel them, we should be able to do more than this, it's a tricky thing because these are people who were elected by their constituents. And we've always had kind of a balance in the United States where it's hard to remove an elected official, except in California through a recall, right? I mean, the voters have a way to get rid of an elected official. You can recall them. So when you start saying, as is the case in San Francisco when we saw this controversy a couple of years ago, that the mayor can suspend a member of the Board of Supervisors or the legislature can expel a member of the legislature, it gets a little tricky. So I think the balance that they drew, which doesn't really change a lot, all it says is the newspaper stories can't say they suspended Leland Yee with pay and he continues to draw his salary. So that's really what this does, and it's not profound change in any way. It just changes that one little element.
All right. And does anything strike you about supporters or opponents of Prop 50?
There are not really a lot of opponents of Prop 50. I mean, the Republican, there are people who say it doesn't go far enough, but I don't think anyone thinks that it's a good idea to let a legislator who's committed a pretty bad crime be suspended with pay.
All right. So that's Proposition 50. We have one proposition on the statewide ballot on June 7th. Find more information about it at yourcallradio.org. And Kim, we have a caller who couldn't stand the line, wanted to know, is there a difference between decline to state and no party preference?
Oh, that is such a great question. We have changed the labels many times. And so we call voters who are independents in California, everything but independent. As you were pointing out earlier, there's a lot of confusion over American Independent Party and people accidentally checking that box. We know from the LA Times study that was done and their reporting that that at least about 3 in 4 of people who are registered with the American Independent Party, according to their sample of 500, didn't know they were registered and didn't want to be registered with that party. So We don't make it clear on the form to select independent, and so we have a question that says, no, I do not wish to disclose my party preference, which actually is a triple negative, and it's not really clear what you're asking people to say or not to say, despite that many people do succeed in checking that box, and we call those voters no party preference voters or NPP voters. But the old label that we used was decline to state, and so, or the short term being an election speak DTS. So you'll often hear people referring to independents by both these titles, no party preference or decline to state, or sometimes they'll call them non-affiliated, or sometimes they'll call them non-partisans. We call them everything but independents, which is really probably what we need to put on the form and what one of the things that we hope we'll be able to work on in the next year.
And Kim, after the break, we're going to speak with Tim about some of the propositions in San Francisco and the Bay Area. You're in Sacramento. Does anything else stand out for you in terms of propositions in other areas of the state?
Well, we do have a couple of propositions on our ballot in Sacramento, but we also have a mayoral contest that is very hotly contested. A former pro tem of the Senate, Daryl Steinberg, is running for mayor against a current city councilwoman and Vice Mayor Angelique Ashby. And you know, it's the first time we've had an open seat contest for mayor in 8 years in Sacramento. So I expect for voters around the state, there are a lot of contests on the ballot that are so-called down ticket, and they need to, you know, be prepared for all those choices. It's not easy being a voter in California when it comes to, you know, getting prepared and making your decisions. But fortunately, We do have the internet, which has lots of great information. We recommend a site, and we have our online voter guide on our site at calvoter.org. And one of the things we feature in our guide is the Voters Edge website, which is a product of MapLight and the League of Women Voters out there in the Bay Area. And this is a great resource for all voters in California to learn about everything on their ballots and all the contests and follow the money and find out who's funding the campaigns for president all the way down to your local legislative contest. So there, if people poke around online, they're going to find a lot of great resources.
And in an interview with the San Jose Mercury News, you said any political consultant who's going around predicting lower voter turnout in this election is mistaken and should be fired. So you think turnout's going to be huge?
I did say that, and I do think it's going to be huge. I mean, I couldn't believe, honestly, right after the major candidates pulled out of the Republican race, you had all these Republican consultants around the state saying, that means our election's over. And I really disagree with that. People are so fired up about this presidential election. Mm-hmm. And while our primary itself may not be as contested on the Republican side as it was a month ago, there are many people who are really looking forward to voting for Donald Trump, looking forward to voting against Donald Trump, and they are going to do that on June 7th in California in high numbers. So, I really think that this election has captured voters' attention nationwide. It is also the first open seat contest for president in 8 years. And so I expect that voters are going to continue to be engaged in and voting in our primary and in our general election in November.
Well, Kim, thank you so much for joining us, and thanks for trying to make it easier for people to vote. Kim Alexander is president and founder of the California Voter Foundation. Thanks, Kim.
Thanks, Rose.
And we are going to take a quick break. If you have any questions about the June 7th primary, we would love to hear from you. If you have basic questions about the presidential election and how to ensure that you will be able to vote on June 7th, or if you're a mail-in voter, we'd love to hear from you. Coming up after the break, we're going to talk about some propositions here in San Francisco, and we will talk about the hotly contested DCCC race. That is the Democratic County Central Committee. It's your call. We'll be back after this.
You're listening to Your Call on KALW Local Public Radio. To take part in today's conversation, call 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. Toll free. Let us know if you're a first-time caller. We always like to hear from new voices. And if you'd prefer to write rather than call, you may email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment at yourcallradio.org. Coming up in a half an hour at 11 o'clock, it's Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting here on 91.7 KALW San Francisco.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will speak with first-generation college students about their first year of college. Organizations like Students Rising Above are helping determined students without financial support and sometimes without family support get into college and graduate in 4 years. It's an incredible organization, and we hope you can tune in tomorrow. We're going to talk with these students about the challenges they face and also what's been most rewarding in their first year of college. And then on Wednesday, we'll speak with Andres Resendez, who's out with an incredible book called The Other Slavery. We are talking about Indian slavery, Native American slavery in the United States. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about California's primary on June 7th. Today is an important day. It's the last day you can register to vote or change your registration to vote in California's primary, and you can do it up until midnight tonight. You can do it online. We've got all the links at yourcallradio.org. And if you have any questions, give us a call, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. I'm going to talk about these rules a couple times. So if you're voting for a Republican or a Green Party candidate for president, you have to be registered with those parties. If you're voting for Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton, you can be either a Democrat or no party preference. But if you vote by mail, you have to request a Democratic ballot. You have until the end of this month. A lot of people say you might want to just go vote in person, but be sure to bring in your ballot. Now, if you live in San Francisco and you want to vote in the race for the Democratic County Central Committee, you have to be a Democrat. So if you're registered Green, for example, and you want to vote for Bernie Sanders and you want to vote in the DCCC race, you can't. You have to be registered as a Democrat. And joining us to talk about this is Tim Redmond, founder of 48 Hills, a progressive daily online newspaper. He's also former editor of the San Francisco Bay Guardian. There's a lot of rules here, Tim. I've been trying to get this out over the last 2 months. I'm surprised it hasn't gotten much more attention.
No, and it's really important because there are people in San Francisco, very progressive people who would be Bernie Sanders supporters who happen to be registered Green. They may not realize that the Green Party has a closed primary. In other words, if you're a Green Party voter, you can vote in the Green Party primary. No one else can. The Republican Party has a closed primary in California, not in every state, which means that you have to be Republican, registered Republican, to vote in the Republican primary. The Democratic Party has an open primary, which means you have to be Democrat or decline to slate, but you can't be another party. You can't be a Green and vote in the Democratic primary. You can't be a Republican and vote in the Democratic primary. This is not the case in every state. And it's really up to the parties how they want to do their primaries. So it leaves things really confusing. Then, as you said, you add on the Democratic County Central Committee. That's not an open thing at all. That's only for registered Democrats. So I'm worried that people are going to show up at the polls or are going to get their absentee ballot and think they're voting for DCCC and think they're voting for Bernie Sanders or for Hillary Clinton and find out that they've got the wrong party registration. Maybe not the wrong, but their party registration does not allow them to do that because they didn't understand the rules.
Right. I've been meeting a lot of Greens who are changing their registration just for this election, and then they're going to change it back.
And you can do that. It's relatively easy to change your party preference. Yeah, you can just go online, change your party preference, and then after this election, you can say, okay, I want to be a Green again, and you can do that. That's right. Not that hard.
Right, and you have up until midnight tonight, and you can do it online.
You can do it online. So, and as you mentioned, Rose, there's a site, there's a really easy site you can go to, and you just basically type in your name and your address, and it will tell you where you're registered. I think there's a whole lot of people in California who don't remember whether they're registered Democrats or no party preference. You know, I mean, I ask a lot of my friends, gee, are you a registered Democrat? They can't remember.
Right.
I mean, I registered to vote in San Francisco. This shows how old I am. I registered to vote in San Francisco in 1983. And I'm supposed to remember on a contested election whether I checked one box or another. Now, I know I'm a registered Democrat, but a lot of people don't. So it's important to go and check. If you're concerned about voting in the Democratic primary or voting for the Democratic County Central Committee, just check. It takes 3 seconds to check.
It does. But you can't blame people for not knowing the presidential rules because usually by this time we have a candidate and it really doesn't matter.
Right. And we rarely have a contested primary in California. And also, people have been watching. People who have been following this race are looking at other states. And in some states, all the primaries are open. And Republicans can vote for Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders, and Democrats can vote for Donald Trump or John Kasich, and it's different state by state.
Yeah. Well, and in New York, 3 million independents weren't able to vote because they had to change their registration back in October when they thought, well, it's probably not going to matter.
Right.
Lo and behold, it did matter, yet 3 million independents couldn't vote. So luckily in California, we have to change it 2 weeks before the election, not months.
Right.
I mean, it's amazing to see so many different rules across the country.
Right. And let me just add in, too, as you mentioned, it's not too late to register to vote. In fact, if you are not registered to vote and you want to vote in this election, you can still do that. There's still plenty of time. And again, it's relatively easy to do. So please, if you're listening to this and you want to vote June 7th, check and make sure you're registered. And if you're not, register.
And same-day registration in California does not go into effect until 2018.
That's correct. But you can still register up until, you know, May 31st or something, I think, is the last day to register.
Today, though.
Today's the last day to register and get...
For the primary.
For the primary, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you're voting in the June 7th primary, today is the last day to register. Ruby just asked a question about same-day registration. Yes, luckily we have that, but it doesn't go into effect until 2018.
Right. May 31st is the last day to request a party ballot.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. No. So today, up until tonight at midnight, you have to register or change your registration. And if you've got any questions, give us a call, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Donald in Berkeley. Hi, Donald. Welcome to the show.
Yes. Good morning. I'd like to alert people to a link on the website they can go to really see what's going on and how different county registrars have handled stuff differently, which makes it even more confusing. And that's just simply BernieSandersVideo.com. And the other thing I'd like to point out is that because, you know, county registrars in the state, obviously implicit in this, don't have a uniform set of rules, what this is doing now is that people are going to have to go down, if they don't go online today, go down to a county registrar's office, which is, if they're working people, is not going to be easy to do, because you know that the county registrar's office will close at the end of the working day, and people won't be able to get there in time to do what's suggested. So the other option they do have is to do it online. And this this site and another one, voteearly.berniesandersvideo.com, will explain to them how they can do that.
All right. Thank you for calling in. Actually, I ran into some people at the Veg Fest this weekend with the Alameda County registrars, and they said they're just slammed. I mean, not only do they need more workers, but they need more people to volunteer at the polls. They're about 3,000 short just in Alameda County. So if you have some time and you want to volunteer on election day, contact your county registrar, because they're in dire need of volunteers.
Absolutely. And that's particularly because we are going to see higher than expected turnout.
Yeah. I mean, the numbers are amazing. In case you missed this earlier, let me find these numbers here. We've got 850,000 new voters on California's registration rolls.
Yep. And a lot of them are young voters, and many of them registered specifically to vote in the presidential primary. So as you said, you know, and another thing that I'll add to this is there's a lot on the ballot besides the presidential primary.
Yep.
And we can talk more about that. But I'm hoping that all of those new voters also vote in the lower on the ballot races and that they're registered properly to do that.
And we're voting for a senator to replace Barbara Boxer.
That's correct. And that's a big, big deal. Yeah.
And so I've seen two debates only so far.
Yeah. You know, I think we have this weird top two primary now in California,
right?
Which means that the primary June 6th for these partisan offices, and that means for state Senate, for U.S. Senate, is only round one. So what's going to happen is the two Democrats, Kamala Harris and Loretta Sanchez, are both going to they're going to finish one and two, because it seems likely, because the Republicans are not very successful in California. It's possible a Republican will finish second, but it's very possible that the two top Democrats will run against each other again in November. So I think that in some of these races, people are kind of keeping their powder dry, so to speak, because they're really going to put the pressure on in November.
What do you think of that, Tim?
Oh, I think the top two primary is a very mixed bag. It was something that Republicans insisted on as part of a budget deal years ago. It was kind of rammed through. The idea was to get more centrist legislators, because if you have a top two primary instead of, for example, in San Francisco, if you have a primary which tends to bring out more left, liberal, progressive voters, and then the primary winner runs against the Republican, that person always wins. Whereas if you have two Democrats, the Republicans can vote for the more moderate Democrat. This was the idea behind it.
Why would a Republican do that, knowing that at the Senate level, it's probably always going to be two Democrats?
Well, I don't think that they were thinking about that. They were thinking about the state legislature.
Okay.
And so it's a mixed bag. It does have the advantage, for example, with the state Senate race in San Francisco. Supervisor Jane Kim got in the race a little late. Supervisor Scott Wiener had already been running for quite a while. And if this had been a traditional primary, she would have been at a huge disadvantage getting in the race a little bit late. In this particular case, the two of them are definitely going to finish in the top two. And the real, you know, the final will be in November. So it gives her a little more opportunity, because it does give people in that kind of race a chance to enter a little later.
And they have had several debates.
Yep.
And you've covered a lot of them. What would you say are the main differences between Scott Wiener and Jane Kim?
Well, there's a huge divide in San Francisco right now between the progressives and the people who are allies of the mayor and who tend to be more friendly to the real estate industry and tend to be more friendly to the tech industry and the developers. And I think that Scott Wiener and Jane Kim represent that divide very clearly. Scott is the more moderate centrist, some would say conservative, voice on the Board of Supervisors, and Jane is part of the progressive bloc on the Board of Supervisors. And they differ on a wide, wide range of issues. You know, I mean, one of the most obvious ones has been the police chief. I mean, Jane Kim early on said, "Chief Sir needs to go," after all of these shootings and the Blue Ribbon panel. And Scott Wiener from the start, was a big supporter of Chief Sirr, and in fact, on the day Chief Sirr resigned, said, "That's too bad. I think he should have stayed." So, you know, they had huge differences on, for example, Airbnb legislation. And Airbnb is playing a huge role in this election. They've dropped $240,000 into the June election in San Francisco. And Scott Wiener is one of the people who believes that that Airbnb should be allowed to list any host and the city should enforce it. Jane Kim is a big supporter of legislation that says that Airbnb should not be allowed to list illegal units on their site. So regulating Airbnb, regulating landlords, how much affordable housing we should require in developments. Jane Kim has been pushing for much higher levels of affordable housing. Scott Wiener is among those who say, well, gee, if we push it too high, nothing will get built. Scott is a big fan of building any type of housing, market rate housing, build, 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 build. And Jane is one of those who says, no, actually, building market rate housing doesn't help the housing crisis. So there are tremendous differences between them. This is not a race where you can say, oh, there's two San Francisco progressives who just want the job. There's actually significant differences between them.
And again, this is Jane Kim and Scott Wiener vying for the District 11 State Senate race. There have been a number of debates. Most of them are online. So if you want to watch any of them, they've been really good, actually. Good questions.
They are both really smart people. They are both very good at expressing their point of view. The debates have been, you know, unlike some of the presidential debates yeah. where, you know, it's just like, oh, I'm going to make a prepared speech or you're going to make a prepared speech. And then Donald Trump yells at somebody. These have actually been very thoughtful debates between two very thoughtful people who have very different points of view on some of the issues. And no, they've been very, very interesting.
And you can find debates between Jane Kim and Scott Wiener online. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about California's June 7th primary. Today is the last day you can register to vote or change your registration to vote. And let's hear from Paige in Oakland. Hi, Paige. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question for voters who are no party preference. They've already voted, but they didn't realize that the presidential candidates were not on the ballot.
Right.
In particular, I have a colleague who specifically requested to get a Democratic ballot, but instead the NPP ballot came to her, and because she was going to be out of the country on the June 7th, she went ahead and sent it in without anything for president. And I'm wondering if a person like that can still vote for president if they've already submitted.
I don't know the answer to that, but I
doubt it.
I think what you need to do is call your local registrar of voters or Department of Elections and ask. But I would guess that you cannot, once you've submitted the ballot, there's really not a lot you can do.
Yeah, sorry about that. I mean, I highly doubt that she can vote for president. Again, just to reiterate, if you vote by mail and you're no party preference, I mean, you can't vote for a Republican or Green. That's the only reason why we're only talking about Democrats with no party preference. But you have to request a Democratic ballot, and you can do that up until the end of this month. A lot of people are saying take your ballot in and ask for a Democratic ballot. So again, if you're no party preference and you vote by mail, you have to request a Democratic ballot. If you want to vote for a Republican or a Green, you cannot be no party preference. You have to be registered with those parties. And if you live in San Francisco and you want to vote in the race for the Democratic County Central Committee, you have to be a Democrat. I hope you can follow all of this. If you've got any questions, please give us a call, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's go next to... Do we have another call? Oh, actually, let's go to an email from John. Is it fair to say that spending on the DCCC elections will hit a new record this year? What accounts for this level of spending? What does this obligate the candidates to do? And what do the contributors get out of it? Tim, The Examiner, The Chronicle, and your site, 48 Hills, have been extensively covering the money that's pouring into the DCCC race. But before you answer that, tell us about the DCCC.
Yes. Why you should care.
Yes.
The Democratic County Central Committee, for many years in the past, was just kind of a sleepy organization that set party policy and helped run the Democratic Party in San Francisco and presumably registered more voters and so forth. But about 10 or 15 years ago, the law changed and allowed the Democratic Party, the local Democratic Party, to issue endorsements in primaries and in local nonpartisan races, which means that the Democratic Party of San Francisco can endorse either Scott Wiener or Jane Kim, who are both Democrats. Right? The Democratic Party can endorse candidates for San Francisco supervisor. This matters a lot this year, particularly because those 850,000 voters, a lot of them, some, you know, thousands of them in San Francisco, many of them registered Democrats. They registered to vote for Bernie Sanders or for Hillary Clinton. In November, they'll go to the polls to vote, presumably against Donald Trump, if they registered to vote for Bernie or Hillary. So there's, and most of San Francisco is Democratic. So you'll have all these voters who will go to the polls, who may not really know much or pay much attention to local politics. Who should I vote for supervisor? Who should I vote for school board? How should I vote on this proposition? Well, they'll get a slate card in the mail that says the official endorsements of the Democratic Party of San Francisco. And that is a powerful slate card. It's also, because the Democratic Party can raise unlimited money for that slate card, it's a way for big donors to say, oh, you endorsed my way. You endorsed the candidates I like. I'm going to give you $100,000 to mail that slate card to even more people, to mail it out twice, to do anything they can. So it's both a slush fund and a very powerful endorsement. So it's going to be close. There are two slates running, and it's really important to understand that there are a lot of prominent people. There are members of the Board of Supervisors, John Burton, the former state Senate president and now chairman of the California Democratic Party, is running. There's a lot of big names. But essentially, what it comes down to is there's two slates of candidates. There is what's called the reform slate, and then there's a slate that is unkindly referred to perhaps as the real estate slate, but is the slate that is supported by the chair, the current chair, whose name is Mary Jung, who does happen to be a full-time lobbyist for the San Francisco Association of Realtors. And the two slates, you're going to get a lot of mail. You're going to get some mail saying, vote for me for DCCC, I'm great. Those are the candidates who have the most money. But you're also going to get a lot of slate mailings. And it's important to look at these and to understand that it's not just the big names. It's groups of people who have very different visions, not only for what the Democratic Party should be, but for who they should endorse for supervisor in the fall. This is, in a sense, round one of the battle for whether the progressives maintain control of the Board of Supervisors in the fall or whether a more moderate group gets control of the Board of Supervisors in the fall. So it's kind of a proxy fight over other local political issues. So that's what's going on, and that's what they do. And, you know, there's money pouring in because everyone realizes this. Everyone realizes, all the powerful interests in town realize that this is a proxy fight for control of the Board of Supervisors. So there's labor money coming in. There is Airbnb money coming in. There is other real estate money coming in. There's a lot of money. And that's why you are seeing all of these mailers arrive on your door saying, vote for me for DCCC or vote for this slate for DCCC, because both sides know it's really important and there's a lot of money to pay for that.
And so where can people go to just get basic information about who these people are and who's funding them?
Well, if you care, you can go to the SF Ethics Commission website, sfethics.org, and you can look up where all of the money is coming from. It, you know, that's a little bit time consuming. It's fascinating for those of us who are crazy like me and love to watch these kinds of things. There is not, that I know of, a nonpartisan analysis of these candidates. You know, it's not like the League of Women Voters tends to do nonpartisan analyses of ballot measures, and there's other groups out there that do this. Vote Smart does nonpartisan analyses of different ballot measures. No one's doing that for the Democratic County Central Committee in San Francisco. It's almost as if the Republicans and the Democrats were running against each other. Not that the moderates are Republicans, but there's two slates running against each other. And I think what voters need to do is kind of look at who's supporting which slate and which side you want to be on.
All right. So we have links to the articles about these slates, who's getting money, who's being backed. There's some ads going out about, like, for example, the Peskin Machine candidates with a picture of the Guy Fawkes mask.
Yes.
It's looking scary if you vote for these people.
Yeah. I think that Aaron Peskin might be very happy to think that there was a Peskin machine, but he would be wrong. There is no Peskin machine. They picked on that. That went to areas where they think Aaron Peskin isn't popular. And for example, in parts of the city where voters tend to be more progressive, there's a big slate with a big picture of Tom Amiano on it, because Tom Amiano is very popular and he is in fact running. And this is all being done strategically. Okay, let's send stuff to the liberal precincts with a picture of Tom Amiano. Let's send stuff to the conservative precincts saying, oh my God, Aaron Peskin's going to be running the city. You know, it's all as I say, it is a proxy fight for November, and that's why they're doing this.
All right, and so it's important to do your homework. We also have propositions in San Francisco. Prop A, a $350 million public safety bond supported by Mayor Ed Lee and the Board of Supervisors. Prop B, introduced by Supervisor Mark Farrell, mandating an increasing level of funding for the Recreation and Parks Department. Prop D would increase investigations of officers involved shootings. I mean, there's a lot on the ballot this
and
time.
And Prop C, which is a big change in how we do affordable housing. Prop C would increase the percentage of affordable housing required of developers and also change the rules to let the Board of Supervisors raise it up or down at any time in the future. So there's a lot. These are important issues that are on the ballot.
Really important. Ballotpedia is good for some of these propositions because you can find out who's funding them, who supports them, and who opposes them.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, there's I think people need to do their homework. Some of these, for example, Prop B. Prop B sounds great. Gee, let's give more money to the parks. Who could be against that? But there actually is significant opposition from people who say, number one, it's yet another set aside. It's yet another, like, it doesn't add any new money. There's no new revenue. It just says X percentage of the budget must go to the parks. And people are saying, well, we've got set asides for this, set asides for that. Also, there's a lot of people who are unhappy with how the Recreation and Park Department is being managed now and don't want to give them more money. So even though this seems like, you know, how could you be against more money for the parks? There's arguments on both sides.
Right. Okay, so if you go to Ballotpedia, and we've got luckily good outlets here in the Bay Area that are covering these issues, find information. And we're almost out of time. We just had another question about easy ways to check your registration. We've got a link at yourcallradio.org. You can check your registration there. Again, you have until midnight tonight to register to vote or to change your registration for the June 7th primary. And we're putting all of the information about how you can make sure that your vote counts at yourcallradio.org. Tim Redmond is founder of 48 Hills, a progressive daily online newspaper, and former editor of the San Francisco Bay Guardian. Tim, thank you for coming in.
Of course. Happy to be here.
Thank you. And thanks for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.